Oh, good morning. My name is Sharon. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Irvin. And let's laissez le bon temps rouler. That's it. Let's let the good times roll. We had it this morning. Trouble always started out like fun with me. So thank you for that. And I just have to get this out of the way. First of all, I have a little wardrobe malfunction. My dress is on backwards. I just discovered it. It's the same both ways, I think. I'm not sure, but it's a new beginning, I guess. But and I'd like to thank very much Dick and Barbara and the committee and Steve for driving us and everybody. You know, all my giants are here and all in the front row and second row and the third row and the fourth row and the fifth row and the sixth row and all of you. You lift me up so my vision is brighter and bigger than I thought would happen. And thank you, Dottie and Jackie, for being here. Also, I slept bad last night. I don't know if it's the barometric pressure. In Los Angeles, we're not used to rain, so I was like, what's that noise? And I woke up a lot. And then I realized one of the reasons why I was waking up was because of Clancy's talk, which was fabulous, but it was that $5 that he talked about. That $5. I said, God woke me up and said, Sharon, you kept that $5 from your sponsor. And he's given you 33 of your 43 years as good sponsorship. And I don't know if you should have taken that. You should have given it back because he's, you know, he gives, gives, gives. And he was worried about that cruise and everything. So I was like, okay, God, have it your way. I'll give it back. But then, sit down. In my morning meditation, God said to me, about that $5, never mind. So, my job this morning is the first three steps. And as my sponsor reminded me, first of all, the first step starts with we. Cannot do this alone. And it only mentions alcohol once in the steps, and it's the seventh word in the first step. And the rest of the steps are about my alcoholism. The rest of the steps are what it talks about in the book, what we're going to do when we are reborn. And I read this little story. I'm going to try to tell it because I really like it. It's about kind of how we all met. We all met somewhere on an island or together, and We're looking for the Holy Land. We're seekers. And we come to a river and we can't cross it. And everybody's a little, you know, there's nothing to build a raft with. There's nothing to do except swim, and it's treacherous. Well, God talked to one of them and told him, bring something that's very precious to you and lay it on the beach, and I'll help you get across the water. So he told all the people, a bunch of them, and they said, I don't know, a little suspicious of you. You probably want something of mine. So I'm going to back off and stay here. But four of them believed, and four of them went to the shore, and one of them laid down a stone. And the stone used to be the self-will and how he pushed his way through life. So he carried it as a reminder that he didn't have to do that anymore. So he laid his precious stone down on the beach. And the second one had a feather. And the feather represented fear. It was seductive, it was soft, but the quill poked holes in the person's life of fear and made them not whole. So the fear had been released. So this person carried the feather and laid it on the shore. And the third one had a piece of driftwood, which now was being carried in her backpack because when she wielded it, it was control. And she didn't control anymore. She lived and let live and put it in her backpack. But she laid it down on the beach. And the last one had a page in a book that nobody understood. Nobody could read the language. But it had reminded that person to stay teachable. So that person laid it on the shore. And all the rest of them were up there arguing, but these four went to bed on the shore. They fell asleep and they woke up and there was a raft that was made of all of these beautiful things that they had laid out on the beach. So they got on the raft and the other ones didn't even know, and they went across very safely and landed on the shore. And when they got there, God spoke to another one and said, you've arrived at the Holy Land. You are a believer. So well, now what you get to do, there's food here, but you have to make a fire and burn the raft so that you can eat. And by burning the raft, which they were afraid to do, but they did it because they believed, it was a huge fire, and the ones on the shore, on the other shore saw it. And they were like, it works. So they started taking things out and laying it on the shore, and then more would come by on the raft of what they had laid out, and then more would come by the next day on a raft until many of them made it to the Holy Land. And this is the Holy Land. This is sacred, what we have here. This is Alcoholics Anonymous for the losers in the world. And we are the lucky ones that we get to sit in a seat here and have acceptance and surrender and hope and belief and faith and humility and teachability. And those, to me, are the first three steps, the foundation of what we get here. And the foundation is, my foundation was built strong. A little background, I came to you 2 weeks into my 26th birthday on August 20th, 1975. I had no idea that I was coming to home. I had no idea that I was an alcoholic. I used to joke about it in the bars. Give me my drink now, I'm an alcoholic, I need it now. And back it up. Don't let me run out. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I just knew I came to you bone tired, out of answers, beaten up, jaw broken in three places, nose broken. I had been victimized and thrown off the road. And I couldn't talk the first three months I was here, which was a blessing. I had to learn to listen. And what happened for me was I called my mother, and my mother said, we can't help you anymore, Sharon. Go to the Salvation Army. I'm the only alcoholic in my family. No one knew what was wrong with me. I didn't know what was wrong with me. Nobody was talking about alcoholism in Iowa in the 70s that I heard. So when I came to you in 1975, because I had nowhere to go, and I called a phone number in front of me, and she said, I can't help you, because she was drinking that day, but she was my friend, and she knew what had happened to me, and she knew where I should go. A woman named Suzanne sent over her prettiest babies and a Volkswagen where I couldn't get out the back. I don't know where we're going. They're giving me a place to stay is all I needed. I had nowhere to go. I'd been in that situation before, but that day, I was surrendered. I was bone tired. I had nowhere to go. I couldn't make a living. I had to go back to court. I had a detective. I was a victim of violent crime. It was a mess. And I was tired. Tired. And these girls took me to a church, and I thought, okay, here we go. And this, somebody raised my hand. I don't know how they knew I was new. I detoxed in the rooms. People got pointed heads. And then the guy at the podium, who I thought was the minister, said he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. And I was a little spaceship watcher when I was a little girl in Iowa going, I'm in Iowa, come get me. And I looked around at you guys and I went, oh, spaceship people. Okay, spaceship people, I can do this. And he hooked me. He hooked me long enough for me to lift my head up off my chest and look around. And I think we all have a hook in us for somebody. We've been given life to save a life. We've been reborn here in the program. Most people get born, maybe find their purpose, and then leave the planet. We get born, we have to burn down our lives. And if we're lucky, as we are today, we get reborn, and then we're given a beautiful purpose, which Barbara mentioned yesterday, page 77. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. It's not about me. But I kind of want to tell you, when I came to you, I landed in the Pacific group. I had no idea that it was in the group that Clancy had founded 55 years ago, that there was strong sponsorship, there was responsibility, there was work ethic, there was values, there was fellowship, there was, you know, big ethic of sponsorship. So I didn't want any of it when I realized I'm at Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd only seen the big book in a bar. Somebody had it in a bar going to go get their court card signed, and I cheered her out the door, good for you, go to A&A. You know, we had no idea what it was. I had no idea. But somehow I landed in the Holy Land. Somehow I landed with you, where I heard you talk about blackouts. What? I never copped to that to anybody. I heard you talk about the Four Horsemen. I heard you talk about a life that has been dashed, families that have broken hearts. And I heard you. I didn't, like I said, I had to listen for 3 months. And I stayed because I was tired. A man named Chuck Nesbitt walked over to me and said, take your pack off, kid, you look tired. I don't know how he knew I was tired. And he said, stay with us for 30 days. And then I think he walked away and came back and said, no, you look really tired, stay with us for like 90 days. But I thought that was nice, he invited me for longer. You know, that's where I was coming from. And I put down my book with my Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass that I carried. Came in here 175, bloated, toxic, alcoholic mess, wired up face, broken spirit, broken shoes, broken face. And you guys raised my hand for me, made me get a sponsor, made me get a commitment, made me sleep on girls' floors. It's like I was living above a liquor store, so they moved me out of there fast. And it started for me. My first sponsor was a woman named Janet. And I only got her because she wrote something nice on her phone number, like call anytime. And she was the only one that wrote something other than her phone number on all those phone numbers people were giving me. And I talked like this, so I really didn't talk. You know, she would find me and we would try to talk. And she said, okay, you know, we have to start with the steps. I had a concussion, so I was really out of it. I was like, okay. You know, I was very compliant because I was tired. I'm a rebel. I'm a fighter. I hitchhiked all over the country. I lived a lot of places. I traveled with people I didn't know. I invited them into my home, people I didn't know. I'm a survivor. I'm a rebel. I had mace in one boot and a bottle in the other boot, you know, and that was the way I lived, whether I was back in Iowa, at the school, living in New York with the carnival, made my mother happy, at the organic farm, at the, you know, the other place, the first commune I was ever at in Huntington Beach that they asked me to leave because I'm a drinker, and I couldn't just smoke pot and drool on myself. So they actually took me to Mount Baldy for a picnic because I drank their bong wine one night. They were a little mad at me, and they took me to Mount Baldy for a picnic, and they said, bring your things. And then they left me with my things and the other dog that didn't like smoking pot either, because all the animals smoke pot, but this one dog and me, leave him on Mount Baldy, and bye. So I found my way back somehow. But I was getting kicked out of places where they were living on the edge, because I'm a drinker. And so I came to you with a lot of story, a lot of sadness inside, because by the time I came to you, I was running alone. I didn't care. No more animals either, because they just either bit the dust or something happened, or it was just me and the backpack. And when I came to California that last time, I was sleeping in an unlocked door off of Sweetser Boulevard. And my mother didn't know where I was. My mother slept at night until she passed at 95 when I came to you. Thank you. As Normal P used to say, I'm overpaid. Overpaid. He also used to talk about seconds and inches, that we are the lucky ones to be here. So many people don't make it, even to sit in the room and hear hope. read in chapter 5. So I came to you, and Janet said, we're going to want you to read 3 pages of that book every night. Well, she gave me a book. I could hardly read. I would, like, pass out on the book. A man named Maurice Zalatow sold me that book. It was a second edition book, and he was a Hollywood writer, and he was a great guy, and I gave him my last quarter because he was talking about payment terms, payment. And I paid him back 1 quarter at a time until I was a year sober, because I wasn't going to owe you anything, because I'm going to stay for a little while, and I want you to think nice of me. That was a big step up for me to want a group to think nice of me when I left. But I knew I was leaving because I'm a runner. And acceptance and surrender, well, I remember that sponsor had me at one point. She said, go read page 449. It's all about acceptance. Well, I have a second edition big book, and it's a story called Joe's Woes. So stay teachable. Ask questions. For 2 years, I read Joe's Woes looking for acceptance in that book. And then I got a third edition, and there it was, acceptance. I just, oh, my God. I was trying to figure out that dollar and what Joe was talking about, and how's their acceptance and stealing the dollar from his wife. I was, ask questions. But Janet said to me, okay, do you admit that you're powerless over alcohol? Powerless. I didn't like that word, powerless. I hung out with people that had power when I was in my rebellion days of anger and protesting and hitchhiking and disruption and everything else that went along with my drinking. And she said, can you remember a time when you couldn't control your drinking? So I had to write it out because I really couldn't still talk. And I said, yes, I remember when I was living in the French Quarter, I was trying to go home after my shift at the split shift. I was tending bar. And I was trying to go home, and Jim Monahan owned one of my favorite bars, Molly's Irish Pub. So I'm walking home down the French Quarter because I got to get home. I've got 2 days off. That snake is loose. I got to find that snake. My boyfriend from the carnival had a pet skunk named Crank, and I would have to clean up the crank messes around the house. And we had tried to have red beans and rice and invite people over, but we were drinking, and now I know I can't lift the lid off the red beans and rice because it's crawling. So I have to get home. I have to take care of things. I haven't been home, whatever home was, 3 blocks down Bourbon Street. And Jim Monahan called me out. He said, Mama Cher, because that's what I was, Mama Cher, S-H-A-R-E, because Cher and Cher alike. And Mama Cher, let me buy you a drink. And I said, Jim, I got to get home. I got to clean up that mess. He said, come on, just let me buy you one. And they had 2 steps up to the corner bar. It was a round bar. And as I was walking up, Jim Monahan was pouring my big rock glass full of Jose Cuervo, nice and neat to the top, no salt, no lime. And he's sliding it down the bar to me. And so I kind of picked it up before it hit the lip. And I moved it to my mouth. And my piano player, who died of gin, he was great, saw me in the back of the room and started playing my song, which was, You Made Me Love You. I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. So I thought I arrived. Just the thought of the one drink in my favorite bar and that song, I stayed for 2 days. 2 days. So I wrote that down. Yeah, I guess that was maybe one time. Now, she said, you believe your life is unmanageable. Tell me how your life is unmanageable. And I swear to God, this is what I wrote down. I didn't have matching luggage when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how scrambled I was. That's how not in the world I was. And she said, good enough. Raise your hand for 30 days. Admit you're an alcoholic, raise your hand. So I did that, and then something happened at 31 days. Now, I had been sober maybe. I was in jail a couple of months in Bogalusa, Louisiana, as you know. Not a fun place to go to jail. No, those bugs drag your shoes across the floor at night. They're so big. But I had found the guy making his own, I guess they called it Pruno. I don't know. It was just bad something, but I hold my nose and drink it. So I didn't even stay sober that time in jail. And I raised my hand and I pulled it down. I said, I have 31 days. And there was a moment, I had my first spiritual moment with you. I don't stay sober 31 days. There's something at work here, my soul said. I couldn't probably articulate it. And it woke me up a little bit to that came to believe. And then she said to me, okay, well, it's time to go do the third step. And we left the yard that Saturday where we played volleyball at Clancy's. I played there for a long time. We had softball. We had a lot of activities and fun and fellowship. And yeah, we did so many panels. It was a lot of fun. Those were the glory days. And I came to her house after the yard because I couldn't play yet. My jaw was still wired up and they wouldn't let me. And she said, okay. She got the book down and she pulled me down on our knees in the middle of her living room with the door open to the outside and her kids in the other room. And it was like, crap. I don't want God to know where I am. Me and God had a falling out of that Catholic church years ago. But she pulled me down on my knees and she said, okay, open the book. And I had to mumble along with her. She said it out loud and I mumbled along with her on page 63 of the third step prayer. God, offer myself to thee. Build me to this. And she was like, she jumped up and pulled me up and she was so excited that I had done this. And she hugged me. And Janet was small, so she was like right in my, her head was right in my chest. And she was hugging me and so excited. And I'm thinking, oh, God, please just let go. Please, I want to hit you. This is not going to be good. It's going to be all over the Saturday night meeting. Sharon hit her sponsor. And oh. And then something else happened that I didn't expect. I relaxed into it. My shoulders went down. I relaxed into it. I fell into her a little bit more, but my first crazy thought, because I have alcoholism, I don't have a mind that works for me, I have a computer with sparks all over the floor because nothing's connected correctly yet, and maybe still waiting on some, but I said to myself and out loud, I think I love you. I must be gay. That was my first third step. And she said, let's not make any major decisions in our first year. So, it has come a long way from then. But yes, yeah. It talks about being reborn. It talks about only a beginning. It talks about our little designs and plans. It talks about running the stage and not, you know, it talks about being the pilot instead of the co-pilot in my life. I do that all the time. I say, okay, God, you're driving. I'm just running the steering wheel here. It talks about a lot of things that I had always wanted to have in my life, which was a power that loved me, cared for me, and that I could utilize other than being the crisis Christian. If you're a hitchhiker, you have a lot of those moments that you pray to get out of them. But to be able to have a purpose and a joy and compassion for the world, that's all I ever really wanted. When I was six, I had that God. I don't know what happened. The mind started. And you introduced me back to that God and more, because my God was love as a little girl. I had a great upbringing. But you know, as we go down life in sobriety, I have had to go through the steps numerous times. I have had to work step three numerous times. I remember one of my first, you taught me how to work. I didn't know how to work. That was after we had done step work, and I had brought this Beacons moving van into my life, which was my first higher power. I don't know if you have Beacons moving van here, but my sponsor was Janet with the big nails and face on my chest and all that. She was a little scary sometimes. And after our Thursday night meeting, I was standing outside talking to some newcomers with my new beau attached to my hip. Was going to become my husband, my first husband. But we're standing outside after the meeting talking to these newcomers and explaining things to them, and Janet comes by after the meeting, puts her hand on her hips and stands there and listens to me. And she said, "You know what? You better get your own higher power, or you're going to get drunk." And I thought, wow, I'm trying to 12-step these new people here. She just took everything, all my clout, and walked away with it. I said, I saw Beacon's truck, and I said, I had a moment. I said, "Okay, Janet, come here. Beacon's is my higher power. It's spelled wrong. It's not like a beacon of hope. It's B-E-K-I-N, not B-E-A-C-O-N. But it's, I got here like an old wardrobe, quilty blankets. God wrapped me in quilty blankets, brought me to AA, put down that ramp, slid me out. You guys helped me put that wardrobe back. We cleaned up the scratches, and it's a beacon of hope." And she's just looking at me, and the newcomers are going, "Yeah, I like it. We like it. Yeah, it's good." And she's looking at me, and she goes, "Good, as long as it's not you." And click plops away. Oh, so mad at her. I'll pray to beacons the rest of my life. And it was a start. It was a start. I still see them on the road. I still get pictures from people that see them on the road. One night I was lost before we had GPS, and I had no gas, and I get off the 2 freeway. I didn't know we had a 2 freeway in Los Angeles, and it was the gas crunch, and they always asked Pacific groupers to speak because they knew we'd show up with a gas can, you know, and so it was one of those, and I'm almost out of gas, and I'm scared, and I get off the freeway, and my lights shined where they all go to sleep at night. There were hundreds of Beacon's trucks behind this barbed wire fence. It was like, okay, I'm going to be all right. And I need reminders. I need reminders. And God has come into my heart in those first 5 years with Janet, and then the second 5 years with Ginny, and Ginny brought me to a new level of understanding. Ginny brought me into a new level of sponsorship with people. Ginny brought me into a new level of being a woman. Ginny brought me into a new level of paying my father those amends checks so that I could get innocence back in my life, so I could have a cleaner slate with life. And I got to see things happen by bringing somebody to a meeting. And I remember, I was a B on the Rolodex. I married a Barker, so we were a B. You were talking about being first in the, and they would roll the Rolodex down before we had, you know, computers, and they would call A's, and they weren't answering at 11 at night, and then they would call the B's. And so I got all these great 12-step calls. I lived by the airport, all these cheap motels, and beating up women, and you know, it was like, yeah, let's go, you know, and I'd bring them to a meeting, and they disrupt, they come to and go, "Where am I? What's going on?" And always, there were always people in the Pacific group to help me with all that. I didn't know what to do, but I had a lot of people like that. And we'd buy them books, and I'd sit in the car and take them for coffee and drop them back off, and they probably came to the next day and go, "Oh, my God, what did I do?" You know, I didn't hear back from them. And she said, "That's okay. That's okay. Just keep doing it." And I got to sponsor a lot of women, and I got to watch them get hope. I got to watch them find a higher power. I got to watch them believe, learn to believe by the experience in the rooms. I've never been in a room where Alcoholics Anonymous people have said, "We don't stay sober through that. I think you got to go drink." Somebody in the room has had experience, exactly what we need to hear. We're a community. I grew up in a community. My dad was mostly Czech, and there was a Czech community I grew up with. If somebody's barn burned down or they lost part of their house to a fire, the men were there rebuilding. We shared our gardens with each other. I understand community. I understand that I have a plethora of experience. I have an abundance of gifts that have been given me, that it overflows, that all I can do is share it. When I realized the third step was not about me at all, it's all about being an example for somebody else. It's all about God. It's not about me. There's none of me in there. Why do I have to do this victory over them? Why? So that you can bear witness to those I would help. Thy power, thy love, thy way of life. In my 10th year, we had a lot of fun. Got married. My dad walked me down the aisle. The money was cleared up with him about then, and he said, you know, I sent him a check and a note because of Ginny, and Ginny said, you know, just be on time with that to your dad. I had to pay him back a lot of money, and my dad and I didn't lock eye to eye or sit at the same table for probably 7 years, and then it started. It was good. But Ginny gave me that freedom because my father said he didn't want my money anymore, but after about 5 years he called me, and he said, but don't stop sending me your notes, and the innocence came back in my life with my father. So I am a believer in sponsorship. I am a believer because you see further down the road than I can see. You lift me up so I can catch a glimpse. And then I get to do and be responsible for the actions involved. Because the first three steps to me are solid foundation where I got to bring my sponsor in every once in a while. Go, did you see any cracks? Yeah, I see some over there. Really? I didn't see those, you know? Oh, some termites are flying around. We got to work on that. My foundation is strong because I've not done this alone. And when my second sponsor smoked pot in Paris and didn't have the sobriety that she was to have when she got off the plane, I ended up at Clancy's door because he was the leader of my group, and I said something to him in the middle of tears and my new baby and divorce happening and newcomer in the room my husband picked. It was a mess. He said, I'm sorry about Jenny. I know you're going through a hard time. And the baby was quiet. I'm crying, right? And I think I said something to him in his living room like, I don't know if you like me and I don't know if I like you, but I need help. Because I'm a runner. I'm a runner. I knew Janet was on to me one time when she looked at me, and I don't know, I was about 9 months sober, and she said, I see you're going to run. Oh, she knew I'm planning it. She said, I want you to hang on to that seat with both hands and don't leave. And she waited until I hung on to the seat with both hands. And then, like, I don't know, 2 days later, she walked by and said, I see you're not gripping the seat anymore. I guess it passed. And she walked on by. Hate her. Hate her. But in my 10th year, I needed a strong sponsor louder than my head who became, I was mad at God. I had been betrayed. The whole group knew about that affair. Ugh. I'm a double Leo. You don't betray me because I am loyal. My loyal heart is right out there. And I needed Clancy to be louder than my head. I needed him to direct me. I needed him to tell me, it's time you do your inventory. Leave them alone. It's time you don't say anything. My son would go over to their new house with their new baby and get in the car and, yeah, look what Jill did. Look what Jill bought me. Look what... That's her name. And I prayed. I didn't pray for her to drink because they said I couldn't do that, but I prayed for her to die. I really did. I was very hurt. So, yeah, so I had to bite my tongue, my sponsor said. He said, do your own inventory. And one night I was in such pain that I sat with my grandma's quilt around me on the heater. I had a floor heater on the heater, and I just wrote. And then I read it to him when he spoke in Pasadena and yelled at everybody all the way there how they were driving or cut your hair. And I'm thinking, I'm going to die before we get to Pasadena, and my inventory's going to be out there in the street. And, but I did it, and he said it was a good job, and then I moved on. I got to move on a little bit. So I needed to start back with me, 1, 2, and 3. I needed Clancy became my voice until I could find my God again. I didn't leave. That's the thing you taught me. Don't leave. We had to work on my foundation. It was crumbling a bit. And so things changed. 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days later, I walked out of the hallway into a new view, which you carried me through that hallway. I didn't realize I was going to go to a new view. I've never been disappointed with a new view in Alcoholics Anonymous by not running away from whatever's happening. Because I have a foundation that I can sit on. And I can come to you and I can sit here whether I'm mad at you or not, and I can hear the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. Which is, there's a God here for us. There's belief. There's hope. There's acceptance. So I raised my son, I got a job, I went home a lot. My father and I got to sit at the NW, have root beers because of sponsorship, because of a God, because I put God in the middle of my life. Once you're awakened, you can't live not awake very comfortably. It's a blessing and a curse. Because I like being in that state of the flow of what we have here, which is one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to bring down the differences so we can have hope again today. And that one job I had early on had carpeting in the private bathroom, and I was in there all the time because my boss used to beat the books on the desks of people and say, I'm God here. And I thought, no, you're not. And I would just look at him, and my sponsor said, you cannot say anything to him. That'll get you fired, but you can give him the finger under the desk. So that's what I did. And then I went in and prayed. And I was able to start my day over a bunch of times. And I took God with me on planes because I was afraid to fly. Fear, 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 fear. Oh, yeah. I just say F fear now, you know. My early days of turning it over and saying the third step prayer, okay, God, have it your way. Have it your way. Because I was letting go. That second sponsor said to me, you remind me of this girl in our group called Sandra Zuger. And Clancy, you'll remember her. She had a trach. And she couldn't talk very well. And she was very strange, but sometimes very sweet. And she would walk around with something in her hand, and it was gripped, and then she would put it in her pocket. And nobody knew what she had. And Ginny was a sweet woman, and she one day coerced Sandra to let her see what was in her hand. And Sandra opened it little by little by little and showed Ginny that it looked like an old dried-up cat turd. I said, I remind you of her? I was like, what are we getting to here? She said, let go of the turd, Sharon. Get out of the popularity contest. Don't gossip. Let go of the turd and let God in that hand. Have some more love and compassion in your life. Believe that it can happen. So she taught me some new things. And with Clancy and going through that messy, bad divorce and being able to stand up with my head held high with dignity and grace, he said, you will walk through this with dignity and grace. And if he would have stopped there, I would have said, screw dignity and screw grace. I want revenge. But he said, so you can be an example to others. And I heard his voice. And eventually I got back to praying again. Eventually I got back to turning my will and my life over to a loving, compassionate God, not one that was out to get me again, not one that was wanting me to be the victim with that heavy, I don't know if you have an old heavy wool coat, but I have one. And I left it in the back of my closet because that's what it feels like to put on a victim cloak. Heavy, wool, itchy. Not fun to wear. And every once in a while when I'm back in that closet, I'll kind of sneak it on just to feel it again. Oh, but that's the way I was living. I had to take off my victim cloak. I had to lay that down on the beach and let God take it away on a raft. I had to lay down a lot of things that I marry for life. Never got married before. I marry for life. And I had to let that go too. And 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days later, went to a new view. I was able to have some forgiveness. There was a new man in my life that I liked a lot, but I wasn't ready yet. And months later, when I saw him again at a meeting, and he walked me to the car in the rain because it was raining, and I said, I wish you'd call me again, and he did that night, 24 years on. And Clancy said to me, okay, just don't sleep overnight yet. So he was, you know, I was listening to him, you know, because God would have said, hey, go for it, girl, you know. So I remember I said, how long? He said, 30 days. Oh, my God. All right, I made it to like 27, and it was a Saturday. And we were at the yard again. And I waited for the very last game that the men play. And Clancy was playing in that game, and they were just starting to take down the net and put things away. And I kind of walked up to him, and I said, Casey and I are thinking of going out of town tonight and together. And it's been not quite 30 days. So he kind of like put his arms up and looked down at my feet, and I looked down at his feet, and oh my God, I felt like I was talking to my dad. And then he kicked sand on my shoes and said, okay, go ahead. So I got his blessing. And we were together a long time, and we didn't live together, and that was good because we kept God in our relationship, because I was raising a child, and that child needed to go to the Catholic school where he got kicked out of the Lutheran school, and in kindergarten he had a rap sheet, and I was, yeah. I wasn't believing, and I wasn't believing then that anybody was in charge of my son but me, and I had to let the nuns have him, and they did a good job with him. He likes structure, go figure, and he's not an alcoholic that I know of. So my son grew up in the middle of you. Thank you. We did a good job. And I had to continue to bring God into our life. I had to continue to bring God into my travels. I had to continue to bring God on the plane. And one day he was in first class. There was a seat there, and that was where God sat. I just knew God was in first class. And I never had any fear after that. I let God get on the plane first. So God has taken a lot of my fear away. I have alive let go of the turd. I have tried with action to act better than I feel in situations that were, I thought, insurmountable, going through that divorce. Going through, recently I went through a huge job elimination, a position that's after 16 years, and you know, I'm recreating my life at this age, which is like whatever. I feel still like I'm 40, so I think I'm 43 years sober, so I got sober in the womb, I guess. I don't know, but I went deep and dark, though, for a while because I said goodbye to a girl that I sponsored and walked through the steps and watched her find a God and watch her finish her first marathon and watch her stand in the middle of when Aniki ruined her restaurant in Kauai and watched her go get a master's degree in nursing and get a doctorate in nursing because she heard God when she stood in that rubble that said, we need nurses. That girl was a taker when I met her. A lot of money in her family, and she was a taker. And she became a beautiful giver. And I said goodbye to her a couple months ago after sponsoring her for almost 40 years. That was hard because it brought up all the other grief I went through. My mother a few years ago, laying by her, giving her her last kiss. My husband 7 years ago now, holding him on his last moments with all of you there. And a huge, beautiful God of love in that room. You've taught me that everything I do is for others. Everything I am is for others. I have compassion for myself. I've learned to take that negative thinking, put her in the car, make her a tuna sandwich, drive her to a bus stop, thank her for being in my life and helping me survive, opening the door, putting the tuna sandwich on the bus stop, closing the door, waving goodbye, and driving away. I have done that to my evil twin. I have done that to her. And then I realized there's going to be a homeless person eating tuna with mayo, maybe hot in the sun. So she comes back, so now it's peanut butter and jelly when I take her out. You've taught me that that is a waste of my time here on the planet. Because God is. God is right now, right with me, right with you, right with all of us as seekers. Seeking is part of what I do. I love learning. I love sitting with these people here and all of you and learning and listening. What is love? That's my God today. Love, love and joy. I can be in pain and have joy. I could be at pain and all of the people I love that I got to hold on their last breath. I can be at pain when I have to do the compassionate thing and call the vet to come put my dog down. But I have joy because I have God, and I have you, and I have hope, and I have acceptance, and I surrender every single day to that. Sometimes I forget, and I have to do it again and again and again. But that's okay because the phone rings. I call my sponsor every Tuesday, and I don't use my cell phone to just hit Clancy. I dial it. I hit the numbers. I know his number by heart. Know your sponsor's number by heart. It may save your life one day. That's just something that I've learned from the very, very beginning. But when I talk to you, there's a God in there. Because it's heart to heart, it's experience, strength, and hope. You understand me like nobody in my family ever will. Ever will. My mother used to say, you still bring the party, Sharon, but your friends are so much nicer. So there's so much in this. I'm not going to go through it like through the book and a workshop. That's another thing. But you help me every single day make a decision to be part of the force for good. Every single day you've taught me how to be in the world. What is love? Sometimes I'll just walk down the street and smile at people. I'll have an intuition to call somebody, and I will do it. I have an extra $20. People did it for me. Put in that newcomer's purse or somebody I know who's having a hard time. When I was 10 years sober and I had no money, I got through my mail slot a card that had $100 bill in it and said to the Barker Baby Christmas Fund. That was when I was going through my divorce, and somebody just put it through there. When I had no money for Thanksgiving that year, Clancy sent from the mission turkey and all the stuffing and everything so I could buy all the other people that had nowhere to go in my area over. It's what we do for each other. What do you need? How can I help? That's my God. My God has got the compassion that allows me to be frightened and frail and call out for help and yet ask for strength and not be anything but an alcoholic looking to quiet my mind. Allow me to know there's hope on a daily basis, because sometimes I forget, and I don't want to forget too long. I don't want to have a lot of time between surrenders. Don't wait too long, Sharon, to go between surrenders. I knew in the last 2 years of my life that my life was really tough. Bob even said it yesterday. That was a blessing for you to have your job eliminated and move to Dallas, because we were going to have to pull you up by your hair, because I kept thinking, there's one more thing I can do better. There's one more thing I can do better, because I am loyal to a fault sometimes. And God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, and God allowed me to sleep finally. I wasn't sleeping for 2 years. I was working and going to meetings and coming back to work. Going to meetings, coming back to work. 12-hour days, 14-hour days, a couple of months out of the year. It got crazy like that. And I was barely hanging on. But I have my actions. I have smart feet. My feet know where to go. I trained them in the first year, and that's what they do. They know where to go. They know how to sit with you. They know how to get me out of bed. They know how to make my bed. They know how to do the things that I have to do to make myself feel better. And after my husband died, I was a couple years, and I was sitting at my desk. I had clearance to the 44th floor. I don't know where it came from, but I needed relief that day. And I didn't think of my son. I didn't think of you. I had that clearance key card in my hand. And I got up and I started to walk out of my office, and I went, God said, turn around. And I turned around, I sat down, and I cried for a long time. And then I was able to tell someone about it. I had no idea that was even in me. I had a lot of grief. I didn't know how to go through it. I didn't know how, but I can sit with you and understand now. So, as we go through life, there's going to be challenges. There's going to be moments that you get to shine for others to see. There's going to be, I love the poem by Rumi. He talks about when you wake up in the morning, frightened and afraid, because I do sometimes. Don't go to the library and take down a book. Go to another room and take down a musical instrument. There's a lot of ways to love. There's many ways to kneel and kiss the ground. And we all have our own higher powers. But when we get together, we're a powerful bunch. I mean, we drank Seattle out of coffee at the International. How can you do that? You know? I think I'm done, and I wanted to let you know that we are all pilgrims here, and we are all looking for the Holy Land, but guess what? It is right here with you today. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Sharon, so much.